I'll get to my main commentary topic in a moment, but first, President Trump should instruct Sarah Huckabee Sanders to never again allow TV cameras into White House press briefings. The so-called reporters fall all over themselves for FaceTime on camera to ask and sometimes shout questions at Sanders, questions that are ignorant and insulting. The whole agenda of these fake news reporters is to try and embarrass Donald Trump on camera. Let them ask their questions without granting them camera time, from which they can carry on their anti-Trump propaganda campaign. These people are like trained monkeys who'll do anything to be noticed in the zoo. Democrats got absolutely nothing by shutting the government down. Chuck Schumer is under fire from the increasingly large radical left wing of his party, and it forces him to make outrageous statements. Schumer is slimy, but he's not a fool. He knew that Trump was not going to back down on the demand for Democrats to act responsibly and vote for the steps necessary for our national security. His far-left wing base of people like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and Hillary Clinton, among others, forced Schumer to put his foot in his mouth and shut down the government. When it became apparent that the Democratic demands for Congress and the president to yield to their blackmail and allow them to make Democratic voters out of those in the illegal DACA program, Schumer folded like a salmon in the talons of a hawk. That still, however, did not keep Schumer from proclaiming a great victory for Democrats. Much like Goliath bragging that David didn't really hit him with the rock. Schumer came before the fake news cameras and purposely lied to the American people again. He got his butt kicked by Trump, but pretended that it didn't hurt. The truth is, the Democrats had assurances from Trump and McConnell that Congress would take up the issue of permanent solutions for DACA, people who have been brought here illegally by their illegal immigrant parents, before they shut down the government. That's all they have now after realizing their mistake and ending the shutdown. Congress now has until February 8th to figure out a budget and keep another shutdown from happening. To further show his incompetence, Schumer told the press that he and the Democrats were withdrawing their promise to fund the wall on the Mexican border. Remember, these Democrats, in years past, have voted to build a wall. What an ignorant thing for Schumer to say. There will be no solution on DACA immigrants until the Democrats agree to protect this country's security by funding that wall, ending the inane policy of bringing immigrants here by lottery, something that Schumer himself championed a few years ago, and also ending the awful practice of chain migration, the program that allows immigrants, once here, to bring in all of their relatives. There is no limit on how many they can bring in, and many of them breed like rabbits. Each of the president's proposals, as I've outlined, are common-sense measures that Democrats themselves say they approve. The problem is that Schumer and his left wing want to use their desperate need for future Democratic voters to hold hostage the security of the country. President Trump and the Republicans have to reject this blackmail attempt by Democrats to let them know that there is no use in having negotiations about DACA if they are not willing to vote for the nation's security. Refuse to even speak of DACA until Schumer drags his constituency over the line of obstruction. Since Trump's election, Democrats have offered no course for the country except for resistance and obstruction of the agenda that the American people elected Donald Trump to put into place. We are now deeply embroiled in questions about the FBI and Justice Department under Obama, who, it appears, worked to keep Hillary Clinton from legal charges that would have kept her from the presidency. And before and after the election, working behind the scenes to destroy Donald Trump, the citizen, and the president. The fake news media has failed to report all of this, and they'll continue to try and paint a negative picture of those who are trying to get to the bottom of what many, including myself, say is the greatest scandal in modern history, and has caused more than half of all Americans to not trust the FBI and Justice Department. Hillary Clinton, Loretta Lynch, James Comey, Valerie Jarrett, the Democratic National Committee, and dishonest officials at the very top of our institutions overplayed their hand. Their hate of Trump and their desperate plans to continue a cover-up of their activities led them to demand a special investigator to look into a Trump-Russia collusion in the election. FBI head James Comey leaked inside information to a friend of his who he knew would give it to the New York Times so that the Democratic demands for a special investigator would lead to the appointment of Comey's best friend, Robert Mueller. The rest is history. After a year and the expenditure of hundreds of millions of tax dollars, Mueller has not been able to find one scintilla of evidence of a Trump-Russia collusion. On the contrary, the tables have turned, and evidence suggests that there was collusion between Hillary Clinton, top FBI officials, including Comey, the Democratic National Committee, and top officials at the Justice Department, including Loretta Lynch and possibly even Barack Hussein Obama himself. This will all blow up in the face of a dishonest Democratic Party and individuals who colluded to destroy Donald Trump before the election and to destroy the Trump presidency once Trump was elected. Any American who is not appalled at the hint of our top law enforcement divisions working with Democrats to overthrow a lawful election is abominable. And any American who was involved with this attempted coup is an enemy of our Constitution and a threat to our freedom. Those of my generation are partially responsible for the breakdown of our society. We worked extra hard to give our children and our grandchildren a better life than we had growing up. Along the way, we overcompensated. We can't blame that on them, because it's human nature to take whatever's offered and come to consider it as their due. We have also been programmed to think that our children have to have a college education to succeed in life. While it is true that college is a necessity for certain occupations, such as a lawyer or doctor, it is not true that not attending college dooms one to failure. In fact, in many cases, going to college is of no real life benefit. The cost of attending college in America has skyrocketed. Young people graduate with degrees they'll never use. Community college is frowned on, and trade schools as well. That is a mistake. Our young people seem to think that the college with the most publicity is best. Therefore, they graduate with massive debt that takes forever to pay off. Many never pay it back. We should try to guide our children towards a community college or a trade school. This is not the America that you and I grew up in, where we could once depend on a decent job in a mill or telephone operator. Jobs of the future will be challenged by automation. While fast food employees were picketing for higher pay, their employers were installing machines that don't picket or complain. Amazon just introduced a supermarket where no checkout clerks are going to be needed. If that spreads, and it probably will spread, the jobs as clerks in supermarkets will be as much of a distant past as the company that made buggy whips or the folks who had payphones in airports and on the street. So what to do? Prepare for future employment in fields involving computers positions in the healthcare industry. Train as a plumber or electrician. You do have several options, but it requires more thought than just drifting through college with weekly keg parties. The time to prepare is now, not panic when the job you're filling goes away. I'm always amused when a college graduate tells me that they are all set because they have a degree. A degree in what? Experience in what? It's just a piece of paper until you can actually do a job. Don't depend on falling back on McDonald's. We will soon be able to add fries with that by machine. Don't misunderstand me. In certain circumstances, a college education is not just needed, it's required. But not for everybody. The tax bill that President Trump and Republicans got through Congress against united obstruction by Democrats is proving to be the stimulus needed to keep our economy in recovery mode. Those corporations that Democrats denigrated are expanding their companies. They're hiring new workers, giving raises in pay, and large bonuses that enable the workers to spend more on their families, and that does stimulate the economy. Remember the Democrats and liberal politicians who predicted doom if workers were able to keep more of what they earned? Several, including billionaire and anti-Trumper Mark Cuban, guaranteed that if Trump was elected, the stock market would die like a condemned killer. Of course, we now know that all of those claims of Armageddon were wishful thinking by a Democratic Party that has no answers for our future, but constantly attacks answers offered by this president. It's easy to sit and criticize. It's much harder to actually stand up, take responsibility, and get the job done. People like Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi are outdated. Schumer shut down the government because President Trump would not agree to negotiate a deal to legalize illegal immigrants of DACA without a vote from Democrats to fund the wall on our southern border. Do away with the lottery to bring in the immigrants from certain countries, which Chuck Schumer helped put into law, and end chain migration. Look at his attempt to claim victory over Trump in the shutdown process. That's like a gladiator claiming to have bested a hungry lion in combat. It never happened. Democrats use poor people as their pawns in a quest for political power, especially the poor of the black community, who have been made dependent upon government for their very livelihood. Democrats use poverty as a political meat axe. So what does it mean to be poor in America today? As Robert Rector of the Daily Signal explained, to the average American, the word poverty suggests significant material deprivation. But the actual living conditions of those the government defines as poor differs greatly from that perception. According to the government, the typical American defined as poor by the Census Bureau has a car, air conditioning, cable or satellite TV, and a cell phone. More than half of the poor have computers. 45% have internet service, and more than 40% have a widescreen plasma or LCD television set. Far from being overcrowded, poor Americans have more living space in their homes than the average non-poor person in Western Europe. Some 44% of all poor households actually own homes. On average, that's a three-bedroom house with 1.5 baths, a garage, and a porch or patio. Of course, there's some poor people who do not live that way, but the overwhelming majority do. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, only 4% of poor children went hungry for even a single day because the family could not afford food. The left likes to complain that the United States has far more poverty than other advanced nations. The fake news media echoes that claim. Misperceptions about widespread U.S. poverty are, in part, driven by the Census Bureau's consistently flawed poverty measurement. In counting income, the Census Bureau excludes nearly all of the welfare benefits. Some 75% of welfare spending in the United States is in the form of non-cash programs, such as food stamps, public housing, energy assistance, school lunch and breakfast programs, and the Women, Infants, and Children's Food Program, or WIC. All of that is excluded from the Census Bureau's poverty calculations entirely. Thus, the Census Bureau counts those persons receiving non-cash welfare as poor, even if the total value of the welfare assistance received greatly exceeds the poverty income thresholds. I'll give you an example from 1988, and things haven't changed much. In Massachusetts, a welfare mother with three children could receive welfare benefits in the form of AFDC, food stamps, public housing, Medicaid, and school lunch and breakfast programs, costing taxpayers $18,765 a year per child. The poverty income threshold for such a family that year was $12,092. But while they received 50% more than the poverty threshold level, the family was counted as poor by the Census Bureau. Our government spends over $1 trillion a year on means-tested anti-poverty programs. But the Census Bureau counts less than 5% of that as income for purposes of measuring poverty. No surprise, then, that government, their own data, shows that the poor actually spend $2.30 for every $1 of income that the Census Bureau claims they have. Where does the other 30% come from? The data is flawed and it skews the public's perception of poverty in America. When President Lyndon Johnson launched the war on poverty, he said that it was to decrease welfare dependence and to increase self-sufficiency, the ability of a family to support itself above poverty without the need for government handouts. By that measure, the Democrats' war on poverty has been a colossal failure. Over 45 years, we spent $24 trillion in anti-poverty efforts. Self-sufficiency has not improved in that 45 years. The keys to self-sufficiency are increased work and stable marriages. Able-bodied recipients of welfare aid should be required to work or prepare for work as a condition of receiving any assistance. Welfare programs should encourage, not penalize, marriage as it does today. Reforming the welfare system on those principles would be good for the poor, the taxpayer, and the nation as a whole. Now, to quote the Liberal News and Observer, North Carolina could be one of the first states in the country to require Medicaid beneficiaries to hold down a job as a condition of receiving free health insurance from the government. The federal law covering Medicaid, the federal health insurance program for the poor, the disabled, and for children of low-income parents, does not allow states to force beneficiaries to work. But the Trump administration is considering waivers to that law. The first waiver issued was for the state of Kentucky, one of 10 states, including North Carolina, to request such a waiver. There are just over 2.1 million people on Medicaid in North Carolina alone. About half of those are infants, children, and young people. Medicaid also covers people with disabilities and low-income seniors. None of these 2.1 million would have to work. If the North Carolina waiver is approved, it would only apply to people included in an expanded Medicaid program. That expansion would apply to people who are not considered disabled between the ages of 18 and 64 and whose incomes are at or below 133% of the federal poverty level. Estimates range from 300,000 to 500,000 additional people would now get Medicaid in that expanded base. People exempted from having to work for Medicaid benefits include caregivers of children of disabled or adult children or the disabled parents. Those receiving treatment for drug abuse would not be required to work. Those of us from an earlier generation should be excused for wondering why able-bodied people should not be required to work while they're receiving government benefits from taxpayers' money. The Bible teaches that if a man will not work, so should he not eat. That's common sense. But common sense is not favored by the current generation, with rare exceptions. This country was built by our ancestors, and those people valued work and never expected the tax money that government collects from working people to be used for those too lazy to work. That's an invention of socialism. Many mean well in their misguided ventures, using other people's money for their causes, good or bad. It's second nature to them. When the first settlers arrived in America, especially the Pilgrims who landed in Massachusetts in 1620, they brought the idea of a form of socialism. They would all contribute their labor to one big pot to be distributed evenly. Now, while that sounded like a great idea, they soon found that people are different. Some would work extremely hard, while others loafed their way along. The idea of the hard workers sharing equally with those who took the easy way out soon soured, and they abandoned socialism, a failed system that has since failed everywhere it's been tried. Still, many liberals in the United States cling to the idea of socialism, people like Bernie Sanders. Our children are being taught that utopia in our schools, and especially in our universities. Aging professors, who are themselves well-paid, keep their own money, but call for others to sacrifice for the less fortunate. I've never liked the term less fortunate. I acknowledge that there are people with severe handicaps that I would call less fortunate. But other than the handicapped, each of us should be responsible for the choices we make in life. We demand and we are given the right to make our own choices. That's what freedom and liberty are all about. But when we make bad choices, we should not expect to be bailed out with other people's money who made good choices. But that brings us back to common sense. And common sense today is rare. And that brings me to another News and Observer story of January 18, in which the paper ran this headline: "Some kids go hungry on school snow days." Now, in the 7-county region of Wake, Durham, Orange, Johnston, Chatham, Nash, and Edgecombe, 118,000 kindergarten through 12th grade students, 45% of the combined area's student population, applied for free or reduced price meals during the 2016 to 2017 year. For some, the school cafeteria is the most reliable source of food in their lives. During summer and holiday breaks, some students have access to food programs run by community groups. Now, I take a back seat to nobody when it comes to concern for hungry children or the helpless elderly Americans among us. But at some point, we have to stop and realize the path to bankruptcy this country is on, a path cleared for us by a liberal community that never hesitates to use other people's money for their quest for the socialist society. While some will accuse me of being heartless for even questioning the problems we have in this country and how we're addressing them, I turn a deaf ear. Why do we have hungry children who are dependent on taxpayers' money for their next meal? I recently saw a TV program that featured single mothers with multiple children. One of them had 11 such children by at least 4 different men. That's irresponsible behavior. And yet, she was pregnant again. If your stomach can handle it, I urge you to watch a couple of episodes of the Maury program. Maury O'Dell has been hosting that fiasco for several years. He's married to Connie Chung, a former TV reporter. Every day of the week, the Maury Show features women who are seeking paternity tests to find out who the person is who made them pregnant. Now, I won't dignify this inane program by using the term who the father is. There is a steady stream of such women, 3 to 4 in each program. That's 17 or so women each week times 52 weeks, or some 840 a year. And every year, the program has run now for more than a decade, every year they keep coming back. The common thread among these women is the irresponsibility each of them has shown for the children and the rest of us whose tax dollars go to feed and clothe and educate these innocent children. The Maury Show is like a wreck where people can't help but stop to look. The women are majority black, but there are more than enough white women practicing this irresponsible behavior. Most of them are obese and have not been treated kindly by Mother Nature. That's a kind phrase to say that their faces, figures, and hairstyles are only things that a mother could love. It would be hilarious theater if not so serious. One woman appeared on the Maury Show more than 9 times, claiming to know who the men were who caused her pregnancy. But in each of the 9 times she appeared for the paternity test, the man she was accusing was not guilty. To my knowledge, this woman has never been able to identify the men, at least 9 that we know of from the Maury Show. But the children are the real victims. They are at the mercy of American taxpayers for their very livelihood. Their chances of ever breaking the cycle of poverty in their lives is slim and none. Many will die violently on the streets of the hood. Who are the responsible people in their own lives, responsible for the irresponsible choices of others? Ann and I had only one child, a daughter. She's now 51. And has a stable 20-year marriage and 2 wonderful granddaughters. We are blessed, yes, but we have also reaped the benefits of good choices, sometimes painful choices that we made in our own lives. My mother and father had 6 children. There was never enough money in the house to satisfy the needs of that many children. So what did they do? My father worked steadily in a body and paint shop and took on as many as 3 extra jobs at a time to feed, clothe, and educate his children. My mother worked as a waitress and as an aide to the elderly to bring in some much-needed money. They never applied for or received welfare, including much-needed food stamps. The only help I can ever remember from government were yearly shots the children received from the Wilson County Health Department. As poor as they were, they made good choices, with the one exception of a cigarette and alcohol habit. While they gave up both bad habits and were active Christians in their church, the alcohol nearly destroyed them and the cigarettes eventually took their lives. Still, through it all, they took responsibility for the children they had brought into this world. In retrospect, I guess I regret not having a second child to give our daughter a sister or brother. But at the same time, I was struggling to make a name for myself and reach a point of financial independence for my family. I reached my goals before the age of 40, but by then our daughter was 38 years old. Having grown up in difficult circumstances, I could not bear the idea of not being able to give my child or children a better start in life than I had. My father suffered a massive heart attack, and he was unable to work at his trade for the last decade and a half of his life. By that time, Ann and I were able to send checks each month to give them the comforts of life. We never asked for, nor did we receive help from the government. Stay with me, because there is a serious point to what I'm telling you. When our daughter was ready for college, Ann and I paid every cent towards her education. We never asked for nor received any financial help. Our 2 granddaughters will not have debt hanging over them for the cost of college, because Ann and I funded their college costs when each was born. We will not ask for nor receive financial help. leaving those funds for someone in more need. When told how lucky I am to be able to do these things, I can only smile inwardly. It wasn't luck. It was setting goals and doing whatever it took to achieve those goals. We sacrificed early on rather than buy things we could not afford and incur credit card debt. Once in that financial hole, it is almost impossible to dig your way out. Steaks for us gave way to hamburger helper and Spam sandwiches. And that brings me back to the point of this commentary. Slowly but surely, we have allowed the irresponsible people among us to saddle us with their needs and their wants. We are called upon to feed, clothe, and educate multiple children from the same home. Given how far we have come with birth control, there is no excuse for having children you can't afford to raise. There is no excuse for the bad choices of sleeping around with multiple men who have no intention of supporting you or the innocent children that come from those sad, bad choices. The use of children to drain other people's money from them began with the demand that taxpayers supply food in schools for other people's lack of self-control. First it was lunch, then the demand for breakfast. The liberal movement even wants to take it further by making sure other people's children are fed dinner as well. And when school is out for the weekends or summer break, we must find a way to get food to those children. Don't misunderstand. I will sacrifice to feed a hungry child. But the list of needy children keeps growing. Many of the same people keep cranking out babies they cannot afford to even feed, and society is chastised if we protest the demands made upon us. We are called heartless. And if the child happens to be black or Hispanic, we are called racists. Meanwhile, most of those poor, innocent children face a life of poverty and will make the same mistakes as their parents. They grew up observing it. While there will be a few who beat the odds against them, God help them, they will persevere against the wind, but they are in the minority. That means that the needs of these innocent children will multiply and add to our national debt. We need not confine ourselves to answers on how to help these children. We also have to find a way to insist upon more responsibility from the men and women who are rewarded with more government benefits for each new child as it arrives. Liberals pretend to be the tender-hearted among us, but they live in a fantasy world where the use of other people's money never runs dry in their imagination. So let's continue to be humanitarians and take care of the needy children among us. But at the same time, we must stop the insanity of adding more and more innocent children onto the ranks of those already here. That's sobering language, but it's time somebody brought attention to the problem. Getting sober, after all, is not the worst idea in the world.